Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another amazing, very late episode of the Ultra Nerd Podcast. I am your oh-so-gracious host, Zane. And today's episode, we are going to talk about Age of Sigmar, or Warhammer Fantasy, if you want to be a little bit spindly specific about it. But potato-potato, right? Alright, but just a couple of things. I do want to talk about science fiction for the next episode entirely. The whole point is going to be like talking about the idea, the philosophy, and the purpose of science fiction. So, it's going to be something different. It's going to be something to enjoy, too. And another thing is, I still need to look into more the idea and history and lore, specifically, of both war machines and hordes. So, stay tuned for that when you're ready for it. But then, let's just sit back and talk about Age of Sigmar. Because it recently got a new set, and I think it's best time now to talk about it. Alright, ready? Ready. So, what is Age of Sigmar? It kind of pretty much is Warhammer 40k, but a what-if scenario if it's fantasy. But that's kind of a lie because it does have its own unique merits than it. It does exist in the same... Well, theoretically, that is. I kind of want to bite my tongue on that. It theoretically kind of does exist in the same... its own universe, but it does make parallels between Warhammer 40k, where it does have characters like elves, orcs, and humans, and that's all. But it also has the four chaos gods. But let's talk about the world first. So, the world of Age of Sigmar is a little bit different than how we would normally see our world, such as planet Earth, the universe, the galaxy, and so on and so forth, where it's separated into several different realms, and each realm is more or less a flat Earth, and it kind of does and kind of doesn't make any sense, where in the center, it's considered the most safest place, but all around it, there's magic in each of these worlds where if you're not careful, you could just accidentally flip a wrist and lightning or fire or even ice could spew out of your fingertips. So be careful if you're high-fiving your friend and you don't accidentally give them the cold fingers or electric shock when you defeat that one final boss. But not only that, each world is unique and it different in different ways, and they're connected by like warp gates, right? And the only way to get through them is through the use of powers of warp stones, I believe. But not only that, each world, like I said, is different. Like, for example, there's a world that could, like, be relate to heaven, which is Sigmar's world. There's, like, a dead world. There's, like, a standard human world. There's also, like, the world of this. There's, like, the world of that. And so on and so forth. Each world is different, and each world is unique in their own different way. But not only that, this is known as the Age of Myth, basically. Where the Age of Myth is basically where gods could be able to roam amongst humans and live right side to them. So there's this one god, though, right, named Nagash, who's basically the god of death. But he's also a very big egomaniac, where he probably has, like, the skeleton bone statue of him that says me, holding a tiny me figure of himself. And you know that one scene where like a character would be panned out next to a statue or a pose and posing like the same thing? That's what he probably does on a daily basis, where he would pose like his own statues just because how much this guy loves himself. So basically, later on, when Chaos started knocking on their doors, but Chaos doesn't have its own world. It's pretty much like its own thing, but yet it still is something that could seep into each of the several realms and just corrupt things slowly. So, but for those that didn't listen to the Warhammer 40k episode, just as quick of the rundown of who the four Chaos gods are. Khorne, he is the god of blood, skulls, rage, war, and death, basically. He will not stab you in the face, he will stab you in the face, but I mean, he will not lie to you, he will not stab you in the back. He's pretty much an honor, idea. He pretty much involves with honor, survival of the fittest, and he will fight you mano a mano. Two go in and one comes out of the arena until one is victorious. There's also Zeech. He's conniving, he's scheming, he's basically sees multiple different endings and multiple different ways of answering things as well. He would ask question upon questions upon questions. He's also seen as like the beacon of hope, where he's also like an idea of change, that your life could change if you follow his guidance. He's also the guy that would be like, oh, you seem to be in a sticky situation, let me just like, boom, your life is now better thanks to me. There's also Nurgle, the god of stagnation, the god of rot, decay, and corruption, ironically. But not only that, he's also like a, what's the word I'm looking for? Like content, the idea of death but yet rebirth, the idea that your body will be used for something far greater, and you have... and you could sleep well knowing that you will die peacefully, and so on and so forth. I always get dark with these episodes, like, what the fuck? But it's Warhammer we're talking about. And last but not least, there's also Slaanesh, the god of excess, the god of pleasure, the god of corruption and flesh and torture, but yet emotions, yet happiness, and yet the idea of having a good time with others, the idea of love, and so on and so forth. Those are the four chaos gods. They do have a good side, but yet they also have the bad side, and they play a game known as the Great Game, which basically shows which one is the better. So pretty much almost the exact same thing as Warhammer 40k, but they love to fuck things up here. So the gods in Age of Sigmar are pretty much like going against the other four chaos gods and what they're doing, because they don't want their shit fucked up by these guys, right? Right. But Nagash, he's like thinking to himself in his big cranium, I have an idea, while he was on his royal throne toilet, made out of bones probably, because his idea is, if he is able to kill off the other gods, then he himself, with the power of necromancy and resurrection, could be able to revive the dead gods into his own army, right? So then he could be able to take on chaos by himself. That didn't end so well in the future, but we'll get to that. But when Sigmar and the other gods go off against the chaos gods, Nagash is basically like, hey, guess what, friends? I'm betraying you! And then he betrays them. And then Sigmar kind of went into a big depression state. And because of it, he closed off the warp gate to his world. And, well, things kind of got fucked up from there on, too. Where basically, in doing so, no one could actually leave their worlds, I mean their realms, and try to enter his realm for safety and for sanctity. But because of it, a lot of people died because demons and corruption and chaos. And a lot of people hate Sigmar for pulling this out under their nose and pulling this idea, well, I wouldn't say idea, I would say action, under their feet and basically saying, oh yeah, you could go up in your little golden throne couch there and let us all to die. It's not a bad thing or anything, Sigmar. You could do that. But a lot of people did not like that at all. But when Sigmar was skulking, he then started wanting to go on a revenge trip, but then he needed help trying to fight back chaos. He needed help trying to fight back the forces of Nagash, and he needed help, and he did something so much in the future, right now I mean, that he could have done right away, which was he basically started making his own space marines, or as they are now called in Age of Sigmar, the Stormcast Eternals. Hang on, my throat is killing me. Let's drink some water, okay? Water drink. Awesome. Let's continue. So basically, the Stormcast Eternals are pretty much like Space Marines, except they don't have guns or vehicles, but they do have griffins, dragons, I believe, and lightning powers. too. And the cool thing about the Stormcast Eternals is they're basically immortal, but there's a catch, a very big catch. And that catch is when they die, it takes a while for their bodies to reconstruct and to become back to their original state. Like, for example, if someone, like, I don't know, like, say, let's just say I would die, right? If I died as a Stormcast Eternal, it could potentially take, like, 500 or even 500 years, 5,000 years, or potentially even longer. Whereas, if I met my neighbors right down the street, but if I came back as a Stormcast Eternal, like, someone else could be my neighbor that I never knew before. It takes that long of a time, and with Chaos Demons able to, like, regenerate, but, like, go back after they died, or, like, having the gas could just be like, oh no, half of my army died, and just snapped his fingers like that and be like, oh, okay, now it's back. It takes some time, and it's a really big disadvantage when your men have to take time to reconstruct their bodies. But eventually, Sigmar does get into the realm of Nagash and try to seek him out. Eventually, this didn't happen so well, and eventually, I do think later, or probably now, that Chaos has won this battle. And basically, everything went to fucktown. And if you've seen, like, some arts or, like, ideas of the maps of Age of Sigmar, you could see how, like, each of the realms are slowly being corrupted by Chaos in different ways. Like, for example, there could be, like, say, a great unclean one corrupting the water. There could be, like, these big structures of skulls and skull thrones for the Skull King all over the place. And it's like, it wasn't there before, but they are now, of how much the idea and the influence of the four Chaos Gods have slowly corrupted each of the realms. Now, let's get on to the fight of what Nagash thought would have happened after his plan, the first plan, that is, failed. So basically, Nagash tried to face off the four Chaos Gods by himself, with their champion, I can't remember his name right now, but he is a part of an army known as the Slaves of Darkness. I know who I'm talking about. Sadly, I can't remember his names. I think it was like Arthas, Argon, Argonian, maybe. It starts with an A. But if you've seen his model with like Ezeech, Khorne, and Nurgle head, dragon, demon thing, that is freaking badass. But anyway, after he died and then resurrected again because, well, he's a god, he actually thought to himself, you know what? That first time, I really didn't do my best. I mean, I could have pulled more weight. I could have weightlifted a couple of times. I could have maybe thought of a different strategy. I was off my A game. I didn't get enough sleep last night, right? trying to pull some humor. But anyway, he then thought of another idea. So basically, he went to the this one area where there was a lot of warp stone to it. Like the thing that was used to basically control places to go to place from each of the realms, right? But anyway, when he tried to do that, he was trying to gather so much energy and so much power to it that it was basically like a multi-realm nuclear warhead. And because of it, what he was planning on doing was a second shot of going against the Chaos Gods. Because like I said, this guy, he's a big eco-maniac. He thinks that he could do it, and he knows that he could think that he could do it of defeating the Chaos Gods by himself, right? And not only that, there are these little rat men and the Skavens that saw the Warp Stone and were pretty much like, that is ours now. Let's go try to get it. And they basically try to do that. And when Nagash was witnessing it, he was almost finishing up the spell and with the Warp Stone. But like, the Skaven were picking at it. They were trying to get at it. And he was like, shoo. Oh my, no, what are you doing? Don't take that. That's my foot. You, someone just stole my pinky toe now. Did that really happen? I'm not sure, but it would be funny to know if it did. But later on, when he actually successfully cast the spell, something went wrong. It went really wrong, like south end wrong. Something clearly didn't go right, where it didn't kill a lot of people, but it did make one thing that he did want. He wanted a new army. He resurrected skeletons, ghosts, spirits, everyone from the realms, from his realm to like Heaven's realm, I believe, to like the under realm, to that realm, to the other realms. Everyone from skeletons to ghosts were being resurrected. And these are known were the Dreadhaunts, or no, not Dreadhaunts. It basically ghost people, let's just say for now. But not only that, when he was trying to get control of them, they were basically like, no, we're not gonna listen to you. Fuck you, dude. And then things didn't end up so well, but that takes us to like present day of the second thing that he did a big oopsie with, and that's causing spells to act a bit more stranger than they should be. Like, for example, if you summon an elemental, and if that elemental has, like, say, a 15 to 20 second time period before it just poofs out of thin air, right? Well, because of that spell that the Gash did, basically, spells have a far longer lasting effect than what they normally should have now. Now, that elemental could be, like, running around, accidentally don't know what he's doing. He could be, like, accidentally getting things on fire. He knocked over your car, perhaps even knocked over your neighbor's a fruit stand or their cabbage stand for like the fifth time. But that brings us to present day, and things are pretty much, well, a little bit more, I could argue, lightheaded. Armies from the cities, from the normal humans of Sigmar, from the dwarves and elves are trying to team up together and take down chaos as well. You have the forces of the elves, you have the forces of the gnomes. That's World of Warcraft. The dwarves trying to go against chaos the best they can. But the wild, not the wildlife, what am I saying? I'm going back to the realm idea again. But basically they are trying their best to stave off chaos, the staving off other greater threats like the Gloomspite Gits, the orcs, vampires, the Ogryn, and up. I'm very sorry. And others. But anyway, I will now finally get into the factions and talk about them from their lore, from what some of their units could be able to do, and from what their spells could be able to do as well. So, stick in tune after these messages, my friends. And welcome back after the break, folks. So now let's finally talk about the factions of Warhammer Age of Sigmar. Now, a couple of things to note before I continue on with the factions. These aren't in any particular order. I'm just going to go off of what I know and familiar. I do have a list of some things that I did put down, mainly lore reasons. But for some of the units, I do know some of them vaguely. So take that with a grain of salt. And I do want to admit, I might have messed up on some things during the lore aspect of the whole world and the world building and the last part of it, of the podcast episode, so I'm sorry for that if I do. And there's also a small rant at the end, so stick tuned for that. Okay, so the Age of Sigmar factions are kind of different, whereas Warhammer 40k, there's the Imperium of Man, there's Chaos, and there's other Xenos races. There's four different alliances in Age of Sigmar. There's the Grand Alliance of Order, which is basically like the good guys. There's Grand Alliance of Chaos, which is basically chaos. I don't think I need to talk about that. There's the Grand Alliance of Death, which basically has Nagash at his forefront with his big head on his statue. Again, me. The guy is a narcissist, to say the best. And last but not least, there's the Grand Alliance of Destruction. Because, hey, if the world sucks, if everything sucks, you might as well have fun destroying some shit before the world ends in a sucky way, right? So, Like I said, there are no particular order on any what I'm about to go with, but I do want to talk about some of them that I do favor most. So, one of them I do want to talk about first is the Gloomspite Gits, because honestly, they sound fun as hell, and it's basically like a horde army, and the lore behind them is that this one king by the name of, Scragrot the Loon King said that this mystical thing known as the Bad Moon spoke to him once. And, well, suffice to say, when you hear this amazing voice that you only heard once, you might go kind of insane. Of everything from sacrificing to praying to it to doing a lot of things for it, and it'll bless your magic with mushroom magic, as he says in the lore, basically. And not only that, there are different ideas of how the Bad Moon came to be. There was this one orc god by the name of Gork said that he tries to eat it and it broke and some of his power actually laid with it. And another said that it's actually like a giant spider egg just waiting to crack, and it will just infest the realms in spiders. And others also say that it is the souls of all the dead troll shamans that died. It suffice to say, because like the king said, he only heard it once. But not only that, the Gloomspite Gits have the whole ideal of mushroom. They're basically mushroom people. I wouldn't be surprised if they just smelled their fauna once and they flew high as a kite. There's this one story quick before I actually get into the actual army, where there's this one Gloomspite Git with this big ogre-looking creature named a Trogoth, I think it's called, and they're basically outnumbered from a skeleton army. And the Trogoths, all they like to do is just break things. All they like to do is smash. So they pretty much would be best friends with the orcs, knowing the fact that they just like to wah. But not only that, one of the small Gloomspite Kid trolls guy, he noticed that one of the skeletons, that this was a skeleton army, was wearing armor. So he was the basic commander. And basically, what then happened, he saw a rock and he tried to tell his Trogoth assistant not to smash, but wait until the armor one skeleton guy comes up close and break the rock. But the Trogoth, all he thought was, blah blah blah, smash. And then he did. He started smashing through waves and waves of skeletons, and like the one troll guy is hanging on his mushroom back for dear life, and then he grabbed a handful of mushrooms, started chewing them up, and lunged at the skeleton armored guy, grabbed onto him, and just spewed this acid-like thing at him, and then he started melting down. And then after he was gone, almost half of the other rest of the army fell with him. So the Gloomspite Gits, let's talk about them. So they, like I said, they are a horde army, and they basically do have a lot of good units, really. From their basic foot soldiers having nets and having different types of stabbers with them. Somewhat interesting cavalry, too. Great wizards with interesting revive abilities, but only somewhat there. They have really good spells, amazing different miniatures with vast colors and so on. They're basic foot units are really good, like I just said, but I mean their cavalry units are also good. Wizards are also really powerful as well once you know how to build them right, but their list can be very specific, wherein some of them can like say you need to have this, you need to have that, or you also need to have the Bad Moon Luna Shrine. So there's that. So it's basically almost like, what do you need between what do you don't need with this army? However, I wouldn't recommend shooting units because their shooter units are shit, which is a shame. However, they do have a really much more interesting unit variety where they have like these weird units that basically, the fanatics, they're basically like these troll guys that have like these ball and chain weapons to them that make them fly-ish. Well, in mind, but not on the table, but they do fly, and they just disrupt the charging phase for some units that rely on the charge. So there is that. So maybe you could, like, stop orcs, you could stop the Beast of Chaos, or even the... Or what are they called? I know what I'm talking about. They're basically... I can't remember what I was about to say. But anyway, these units can be very good once you know how to build them correctly. They can be able to revive off of one another, but it's only temporarily, not silently all the time. So, let's talk about the Disciples of Tzeentch next. So, here's a little bit of lore, and for some of these, I am reading off of different websites like fandom.com, Lexicon, or off of Google, but here's the lore of the Disciples of Tzeentch. The Changer of Ways, the Masters of Fortune, and the Great Conspirator, and the Architect of the Fate. These are just some of the names of Tzeentch, a brother of God to Nurgle, Khorne, and Slaanesh, and often ally of Hornet of the Horned Rat. We'll get into him later. He is the undistributed master of the arcane arts. His followers, demons, and mortals alike swarm over the mortal realms in scintillating glory, searing the land with core-fiercing flames of change. Tazagor's tribes raid ancient palaces of knowledge, while mortals cultists work in secret to advance their gods' unknowable goals. Tzeentch's plans are manifold, and he reveals is watching each unraveling moment. So that's a bit of lore of Tzeentch. So, as of the units, you do have somewhat decent foot soldiers, but what takes the cake are your demons, most of all, because I said this last time in the Warhammer 40k episode, where Tzeentch's demons are kind of different. You do have Tazagors that fly on these flying discs, and you also have interesting wizards as well, powerful, because, you know, he's the arcane arts, so you mostly use demons more than mortals, because the blue demons it starts with pink. The pinkies, basically, when they die, they split into the blue guys, and when the blue guys die, they basically split into brimstone versions of themselves. And it basically is teasing and making sure that the battle lasts for almost ever, basically. And not only that, they have an interesting buff where you could be able to predict the future, because, like, Tzeentch is all about that multiple pathways of how he sees things and how he sees the world in general, right? So say, like, for example, you're gonna kill one guy, or you're gonna take that point that you're going to take. Well, when you successfully do that, you get buffs. And because you predicted the future, you get different types of buffs each time. And not only that, but each unit has a... No, wait. I might be wrong about this because I saw this off of an interesting video off of a YouTuber by the name of Midwinter Minis when he did, like, a starts collecting said Battle Royale where he was using, like, the Nurgle demons against Tyranids, and I believe one of his units with, like, the icon of Nurgle was able to revive some of his units. I'm not sure if that's for each different demon class from Tzeentch, from Nurgle, from Khorne, and from Slaanesh, so keep that one grinding your soul as well, but I might be wrong about that. Like I said, most of the time, you're mainly gonna be using a lot of demons. Almost no humans, whereas you do have, like, mid-range fighters with, like, the brimstones, Tzeentch, you do have Tazagors with their weapons, and the flying ones as well. You have great wizards, because, like I said, he's the master of the arcane arts, and not only that, you also have some units that do have ranged weaponry and ranged powers with them as well. Alright, next let's talk about the Hennadites of Slaanesh. So basically, I just want to get this out of the way. Slaanesh is not liked amongst elves, because Slaanesh, his favorite food are obviously souls, but not just human souls or dwarf souls, but especially elf souls, because Like I said in Warhammer 40K, almost the entire race of elves went to extinction because of Slaanesh, right? So here's a little bit of lore of the Slaanesh's units known as the Hennadites of Slaanesh. So the Hennadites of Slaanesh are the vast armies of hedonists that follow or once followed Slaanesh, the lost god. None can say what has become of the Dark Prince of Preservation, but his followers will seek him or look to supplant him. So basically the entire army is all about that excess. It's all about the sex. It's all about the drugs. The drugs people to Slaanesh. But not only that, from what I know, their demons are pretty much where it's at. They have gotten new units from what I last saw, but I do not sadly know about them. I do know that they look damn awesome. But by the way, their demons, I'm not sure if it does like correspond to their original roster of demons or not. But what I do know is that their demons are considered one of the most fastest units across the game, especially their cavalry too. They're so fast they could potentially get across the map in almost no time. However, all you guys need to literally do is just accidentally sneeze on them and they potentially just explode. That's not a joke. That is actually true. Because with a unit that has massive damage hits, that has incredible speed, your armor tends to lack off because, you know, you're literally thin as a piece of paper. But not only that, your ladies can actually be able to revive off of one another with certain units as well. Your demon princes, demon princes. But not only that, your girls also have exploding hits and they can hit really hard as well. That's not supposed to be like a Slaanesh joke or an innuendo. Damn it, why do I start off with this one? I mean, go off on this one. But they do have some spells. As for them, it's kind of I'm not sure because I don't. Before their new sets came out, I'm not 100% sure that the Hennadites of Slaanesh did have any wizards or priestesses to begin with, because like I said, I think it's more of a melee-focused army, because they hit hard, but they die fast, but they could be able to revive more and summon more demonettes to hit harder. So there is another army in the game known as the Slaves of Darkness, or Slaves of Chaos, I believe, and they do have their own, like, Chaos Sorcerer, and I'm, like, 99% sure, no, I'm, like, 80% sure, at least, that you could use that Sorcerer for your Hennadites of Slaanesh army. But take that with a grain of salt as well. You're gonna hear that a lot. Okay, so let's talk about the Skaven next. So, imagine Danny DeVito in this part. Now, stick with me here. So, if you're Danny DeVito, and if you want to start off with Skavens, then you're automatically the rant man. You're going to take this rant, and you're going to throw them at people. Rants, right? But jokes aside, the Skavens care little about their own history as much as they do caring about their Chaos God, presumably the fifth Chaos God, the Great Horned Rat. Remember the Warp Stone in the first part that the Nagash tried to use, the big Tossa that tried to use, I should also say? Well, they could now appear in almost any part of the world. If you guys played Warhammer Skaven Tides, I think, no. Vermin Tides, yeah. They're almost everywhere. Like, if you get rid of one and turn around, there's like 50 more right behind you. They're almost everywhere. They just like sneak into the cracks and crevices. And suffice to say, they do have their own legions. There's like warlocks, there's one with pestilence, there's one with like warriors and assassins and more. And they care about more or less killing humies as much as they would also try to stab one another in the back. As for their units, it's kind of depending on different builds too, because they have like big hulking units that take a lot of damage and deal a lot of damage. They have basic foot soldiers, they have good range units, they have powerful warlocks as well, and some of their other units are just beautifully made too. Like some of them are also looking like the Great Horned Rat themselves, but some of their units, subpar to say the least. But not only that, they can be... No, wait. Sorry, I'm just trying to think. I'm mixing up my words a bit. Their spells are also really good, too, once you get used to them as well. But they're also a horde army, so you need to watch out of what you need between what you don't need. But not only that, they do can be able to hit pretty hard as for, like, some of their assassin units, their basic foot soldier units, and as for their cavalry units, along with their long-range units. I'm repeating the exact same thing from last episode. But let's get into one interesting army I find interesting, and that is the... They're another elven race known as... Give me a sec, I'm just trying to load something. They're basically called the Idaneth Deepkin. So their story is basically when their god was able to escape the grasp of Slaanesh, he went into the water, and what he saw was absolute darkness in there. But when he started creating them, he was beginning to almost like have second thoughts of it, and because like he was noticing that they weren't coming out-ish, right? So he basically left. He was kind of... Was he Cthulhu? I don't know. Was he Nazoth? I don't know. Was he, Dagon? I'm not sure. I mean, it sounds like something that came out of H.P. Lovecraft. But basically, the Deepkin focus more... They're like vampires, basically. They want to steal your soul, and they want to drink your blood, probably. But their units are pretty much like all about the charge phase, and they have really good cavalry. Whereas their wizards, subpar. But you think it's funny as hell placing different big ass like ships in front of units' way, and so they could take. So they pretty much have to go almost either through it or the other way around it, just trying to get to you. But your units solely, primarily ones that are riding eels, rely on the charging phase. And if you don't succeed with the charging phase, and it's basically like trying to whack an orc with a wet noodle, it's not going to end well. And another unit I really do want to talk about is the Fire Slayers. So these guys are the manliest of the men. Their god Grimnir, I think that's how I pronounce it, is basically like this dwarven god of fire and brimstone, where they basically are in volcanoes. They have like this goldish metal in their muscles that gives them super powered strength. They're all muscles, and they can basically just flex if they want to rip all their clothing off to get ready for battle. Their units are basically good in some way, where it's kind of like 300, and you basically have to hold off a point. They can be able to take damage, but not to a maximum limited. They do have the ability to deep strike, I believe that's what it's called, and there's really not much going for them. Some of their wizards are all right, I guess, and as for their units, they can be pretty much like, eh, if you want to be specific about it. But I do feel like as if played the right way, they can end up hurting, but they're pretty much like more of a tankish, defensive-themed army, if you're into that. But next, let's talk about the orcs. Orcs, 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 orcs! I think they're somehow better in this version than in the other version, because there are two different versions of orcs. There's ones with iron jaws, and there's ones with, like, these... I can't remember their names specifically, but, like, they're basically like a native-themed orc army. And they all care about is the war, because, like I said, they align with Alliance of Destruction, so if everything's gonna turn to shit, you might as well destroy it and have fun with it before everything goes to shit, right? But their units are actually pretty interesting, whereas, like, if you get hit with something, you're not gonna... Like, if one of your units gets shot by a ranged guy, he's not gonna be like that one guy from Skyrim that takes it narrow to the knee and thinks about his life. No, hell no. Instead, he's gonna get even more mad, travel up even further up the field, and then try to find the guy that shot an arrow into his knee. That's what he's gonna do. But not only that, like I said, they both operate differently, but it's best to have them and basically just like throw, and from what I heard, just throw buckets upon buckets of dice at your opponent and just travel 5 inches across the map before the match has even started. But not only that, it does get a bit dicey. Like, you're a pure melee... Sometimes you are a pure melee build army, but you do have interesting sorcerers that can help with the wall power of it. And now let's talk about the Legions and the Gash really quick. So this is the lore of the Legions of Nagash. So Nagash is the leader of this army and the ruler of the entire realm of death. Nagash relies on his matriarch's powerful combat commanders at his service to complete the most important task. The Arcane, the Black Monarch of the Sake of Sacrament, is assigned with the most dangerous and secretive endeavors. I think that's how you pronounce it. I'm bad with English. I'm sorry. But basically, the units of Nagash are, well, it relies on different units where we have the vampires, we have, like, the Dreadhaunts, and we have, like, the basic foot soldiers of Nagash, but unfortunately, Nagash himself isn't sadly that good. But as for, like, the other units, yeah, they kind of are that good. But you also have, like, other different choices, like, you can use, like, necromancers, skeleton dragons, vampires. I am 100% sure you could use Dreadhaunts or other units that have Nagash's keyword in them, even though the Dreadhaunts were like, yeah, no, we're not gonna listen to you, fuck you, dad. But you do have, like, a different assortment of cavalry units, different assortment of floating units, different assortment of sorcerers, and different assortments of spells, I believe. So it's pretty much like a multi-tool type of army, if you want to be specific. Alright, so another thing is, the next army that is a part of Nagash's army is the Orisei Bone Reapers. And their lore is, the Bone Reapers are a brand new form of unlife, purpose-built for war and to fulfill the vision of Nagash to create a perfect endless army to conquer the endless mass, which will be known as the Necrotopia. And these guys are absolute chads. Like, they could be able to take hits like no other. They're basically bone-themed tanks as well. But the downside about them is that when it comes to range units, they're not the best. For some other units they do have are really good. Like, for example, the I can't remember the unit right now, but basically they can be able to hit really hard. They travel slow while they do it, but they can be able to, like, do so much damage. The opponent's units would probably be lucky enough just to survive even one assortment of attacks. And amazingly beautiful, beautiful models as well. Now, another army I do want to talk about that is really interesting is the Cities of Sigmar. So, basically, the Cities of Sigmar is where elves, dwarves, and humans decide to bury the hatchet of hating one another at one point and be like, you know what? Demons and chaos, skaven, beastmen, orcs, they all want to kill us, so why don't we bury the hatchet and get over our differences and try to work together. So you can be able to make a human army from the Cities of Sigmar, but it's best to make it diverse with orcs, with elves, and humans. And the idea is, if you have, like, say, no, I said orcs. Why did I say orcs? Dwarves, elves, and humans. It's best to have those three as an army, because each of them have their own unique abilities with one another. Like, say, you have a dwarven army or, like, an elven army, and if you have a hero of that dwarven or elven army, then they start having more buffs. They have archers of dwarves with steampunk-themed weaponry, and you're basically... You do have a different assortment of spells and casters as well, so it's pretty much, like, up to you of how you want to put them together, though. But next let's talk about the Stormcast Eternals quick. So, the Stormcast Eternals are, like I said, they're basically, like, chosen warriors from the god Sigmar, as these immortal bearers of lightning, giant-ass hammers, dragons, birds, and griffins. As for their lore, it says, a new age has dawned, heralded by the arrival of a new army. They are heroes who forge into legend. The embodiment of Living Tempest cast from Azure, the celestial realm. They are Sigmar's wrath made manifest. The storm cast Eternals. They have entered the mortal realm, but for a single purpose: war. Their units can basically, like, almost, I believe, appear anywhere on the board if they want to. Probably not close to your to the enemy army, but they can be known to get outnumbered. They do have really good shooters as well, and really good hitters too. But they're wizards, not so much. Priests, however, yes, they have really good priests. But the issue is, you can get outnumbered plenty of the time, so you need to be careful about that when it happens. But if you play your cards right, build your units right, you don't have to worry about getting rammed over by a crap load of orcs or skeletons or even rats if you want to. Now, I've been beating around the bush. Now let's talk about the Magikin of Nurgle next. So the Magikin of Nurgle are basically the worshippers of the god of decay and corruption, Nurgle. So Nurgle is all about that corruption, right? He wants things not to change, but to corrupt, to decay, and to basically fester with worms and maggots and all that shit. But not only that, his units are basically tanks. Some of his units are weak, like some of his basic foot demons, but other, like the Blight Lords, they're basically tanks. They do have some, they do have some, I know what I want to say, I just can't think of what I say it. Oh, they do have some potential with ambush, but not that much. Their wizards are somewhat weak, but they have really good spells to them as well. But not only that, they also have like their own flying units, and surprisingly, for a giant tub of rotting flesh and decay, your great unclean ones could surprisingly move with being a giant flesh of mass, decay, and flesh. Now, there is one group of army I do want to get myself into, both on a good perspective, but yet a bad perspective. Ladies and gentlemen, the tree elves known as the Sylvaneth. Now, since Sylvaneths are basically the souls of elves embodied in trees, kind of, where their god, the Ariel, the Ever Queen, is basically giving them new life in this type of form with, like, Gundam-themed style armor of trees, of honey, of different wood, and so on. But yet, this version is, as in the god, still stinks. Even though with three different revisions, she's beautiful as a model, but not a good on tabletop. And the same could be said with kind of the army as well. They kind of have like a double-sided sword to them, where they think it's funny as hell to be setting up different types of wood trees, known as the Awakened Woodland Woods, and a lot of their units benefit off of it. But it's basically, like I said, a giant double-sided sword, where if your units are close to them, they can get the buffs. If they're not close to them, they don't get the buffs. It's pretty much where it is. But some of the other units, like the Drahani, the Arch Revenant, are able to give them buffs, along with your only units that are potentially really good are known as are like these hunter-like guys with like scythes and whatnot. I can't remember their names, but I know what I'm talking about. But as for your wizards, they're honestly not the best, not even the god, because, like I said, she still sucks. But let's also talk about the Daughters of Cain. So the Daughters of Cain are all about murder. And the idea behind them is that they were taken from the belly of Slaanesh, what was left of them, and yet they morph, they contorted into these, like, liamas, like, snake women that just steal your heart. Not figuratively, like, oh, you're in love. Like, literally, they steal your heart. And it's seen in some of their models, like, hanging from their waist. So, they do have really great shooters and really great melee builds, but they also have somewhat decent spells with them, I believe, and somewhat decent wizards. But they can be able to get in there and hit where it hurts. As we say, as it is in this podcast episode, much like the last one. But I don't think there's really enough to say about them. They do have different assortment of weapons of range, close combat, and sorcerers, and a lot of different models, from flying models. I don't think they have any cavalry, but they do rely on being close quarters and hitting where it hurts. I'm an idiot sometimes. Why do I keep saying that? But not only that, let's talk about one of my other favorite units is the Blades of Khorne. Now, there's not enough to say about the Blades of Khorne, whereas they worship the god of blood, shed, violence, skulls, and more skulls, known as Khorne. Blood for the blood god, and skulls for the skull throne. They're somewhat a hardish army, even though favored by a lot of people, including myself, to begin with, so it's not recommended. But, hey, if you're interested and if you're patient with learning the rules, then go right ahead, friend. But what's the interesting mechanic about them is that either if your opponent's unit dies or if your units die, you gain a blood token. And you can basically use that blood token to summon demons or giant demons. However, that always resets to zero, so you might as well use it when you need it and not like right away. And not only that, some of their spells are good, but I don't see them being more of a spell-themed army where they do have their own sorcerers. Again, they kind of do with like the Slaves of Darkness sorcerer that could be said for Nurgle, Slaanesh, Blades of Khorne, and Tzeentch. I might be wrong about that. I might be wrong about that with the Chaos Sorcerer. But not only that, they do a lot of damage, and they can basically charge in there and basically kill like no other army. As for another interesting unit of army, which is the Beast of Chaos, their idea is basically only weak mortals do pathetic rituals and worships of the gods. The transformation and the configuration of a beast is the true child of chaos to them. And they also kind of show it too. Whereas they do have a lot of assortment of different units, but sadly I heard they're not that good. But either way, they do have a lot of different units relying on like these different types of podiums for ambushes. Basically these small units of like that where they line up. I can't remember what their specific model name is called, but there, a lot of other armies have them where they basically like stand right next to each other. That's the type of army I'm talking about. Parts of the units, I mean, I'm talking about. And they basically just like throw buckets of battle axes at you, and they're very powerful. Very powerful. They also have like other units that can pick off, that can perform ambushes and pick off problematic units if you want to. But like I said, they do have others like these giant four-armed monstrosities, like this other dragon thing, smaller other war beast units, and like these four-legged cavalry units. They're sadly not that good. They look badass as hell though, but they're sadly not that good. As for spells, they have really great spells, but like I said and keep saying, for like the four chaos units, you could also use you could use a chaos sorcerer from the Slaves of Chaos. I mean, from the Slaves of Darkness. I'm not 100% sure if I might be right or wrong about that. But what I do know is you could use like a Tazagor from like Disciples of Tzeentch as their wizards as well, because it's a beastman, I believe, and you can have fun with it. So have fun. But not only that, let's also talk about this one really, really interesting army called the Caradhorn Overlords. And these are basically the closest thing we can get to a modern society unit in Age of Sigmar. They're basically like these steampunked dwarves that have like different assortments of like wrenches, pickaxes, and guns. They have a lot of different guns. Even their boss unit has a gun beard. Let me say that again. He has a gun beard. That is freaking badass. And not only that, they have like these giant frigates frigates, I think is not how you pronounce it, frigates, these, like, big ships that could transport your units anywhere across the map if they wanted to. You also have, like, floating units as well, but some of them are not good, except the ones with jetpacks and guns, I believe. But you could, for, like, if we go back to, like, their starships, let's just call them that, they could basically be able to, like, attack, even use melee weapons in the cockpit for some reason. But not only that, they do not have any wizards that I am aware of, but they do have, like, an interesting ability known as Spell in a Bottle. One sec. So, basically, this is Spell in a Bottle, I believe. Listen to this. Ready?
Ready.
One sec, I'm trying to find it. I found it somewhere. I can't see where I last found it. But basically, if I'm... I might be wrong about this as well. Spell in a Bottle for the Karandorn Overlords allows you to use any kind of endless spell in the game. So, like, say if you want to use, like, a Skaven spell, you can use that Skaven spell. If you want to use a... If you want to use, like, a Blade of Corn spell, you can use a Blade of Corn spell. If you want to use, like, your own in the spell from, like, one of those little endless spell packs, you could definitely use that. And they're just, like, a really fun army to play, and they seem badass as well. So another army, which is, like, the last army, I believe, from... No, not the last. There's two more with, like, Grand Alliance for that. So let's talk about the Seraphon. These Aztecian astrologist lizard people with their frog chieftains are absolutely beautiful in different colors and units. They're really strong, but there's a downside to it. As to it, there is, some of their units are basically like a house of cards, like their frog unit, like their frog leader units. They're good, they are, as for their spells and for their wizards, but it's pretty much like a unstable building where you need to be careful of where you're building your army and how you're building your list. I mean, there are skinks, I think that's what they're called, that could basically take up half of it. But you could also, like, use dinosaurs from, like, different, like small, medium dinosaurs to, I think, an actual freaking Tyrannosaurus Rex to a Brachiosauruses with laser diamonds on their backs. But, like I said, they're basically a house of cards, and their frog units, guys, are not the strongest cream of the crop amongst them. Physically, not magically, though. So keep that in mind. You need to be careful with your list building. As for the Luthium Realm Lords, on the other hand, this is the last army for the Grand Alliance of Order, which is the good guys. They are actually surprisingly really good with different cavalry units, different spells, amazing models, different shooting phases because elves. They can be able to hold posts, they can be able to deal a lot of damage. You know where it's going. Hit where it hurts. But not only that, they could also be, I think they could also be able to, like, travel across the map as well as almost like in a turn, I believe. I'm not sure. I haven't really looked into them that much. But they do have amazing models and sometimes silly hats. But they do have really good spells and really good wizards as well. As that ends, I believe, the list of Grand Alliance. But let's... And I think I also finished up with the Disciples of Chaos, but no, I don't think I didn't. There is one more, which is the Slaves of Darkness, and this is where it goes. And I remember his name is Archeon, I believe, and he basically has this power and this grasp where he wants to win favor of all four Chaos Gods. And like I said, this is the same guy that I mentioned in the first half that has like a unit of him riding this dragon demon thing with like a Zeech head, a Nurgle head, and a Khorne head demon on it, and it's freaking badass. But the talk about them is they do have like a different assortment of units, from basic footwork units and basic basic cavalry, and they also can just like be open up to different, I assume they could be able to open up to different units from any Chaos God as well. Like, you can, if you want to use, like, Magic Kin of Nurgle, you can use Magic Kin of Nurgle. If you want to use, like, a Slaanesh, you can use Slaanesh. If you want to, and so on and so forth. You can basically use any unit because, like, they're pretty much undivided, if you want, as well. As for their wizards are really good along with their spells. And I believe that is it for Chaos. Now let's go into the Flesh Eater Quartz really quick. So the Flesh Eater Quartz are these ideas of that they are like these high noble... sorry, throat's killing me now. Fancy pantsy men and women that are high and are almighty and have like an ego that challenges Nagash, which is saying something. But in reality, they're just like these bone-crawling, man-eating monsters. Oh, here's the lore, a little bit of it at least. Hidden among the ruins of the mortal realm thrives the flesh-eater quartz. Bound by madness of their aberrant ghoul kings, throngs of modded lives out their pitiful lives feasting upon the corpses provided by the endless war and strife of kingdom after kingdom. Now, there is this unit called, that's basically like this one guy riding a giant-ass bone dragon, and I heard that is the most powerful unit that they have, and they also have like these other smaller units that are, other units that they have that are like basic peasants, I think that's what they call them, and it's basically almost like basic foot soldiers for them, as some of their spells are pretty decent, I heard, and from what I can gather as well. Some of their units, except for the Bone Dragon, are alright, I guess, as well. But let's also go into, like, the Night Haunts. So, the Night Haunts are basically the army that I mentioned that are the ones that defy Nagash, right? So, basically, they can be able to fly all the time. Some of their units can be able to, like, deep strike. They can be... I don't think they have any spells, but they basically also like revive and go anywhere on the board if they want to. And not only that, I think it's also like a best army to like for beginners because like some of their units can be cheap and they're easy to build too. So if you want to buy them and like learn how to build them that way, that's fine. But it can also be like a small stepping stone to learn how to build like miniatures off of sprues one by one if you want to. Now, let's also go into another interesting unit called the... I went over the Gloomspike Gits for the Ogre Maw Tribes. This is, like, I think the second to last unit I haven't... This might have been, like, the last unit I haven't talked about yet. I have talked about all the other ones, but these are the last ones I haven't gone into detail with. So, here's a little bit of lore for the Ogre Maw Tribes. I cannot pronounce a name. So, the Ogre Maw Tribes are the vast nomadic host of the Ogre kind. They are living embodiments of the Gormagak, who they refer to as the Goblin God. Oh, this is the guy that I mentioned that tried to eat the Bad Moon as his vicious hunger. When they march to war, the ground shakes beneath them, rolling avalanche of unwashed skin by stuffing their gaping mouths with raw meat and offal. And they get thanks to their ravenous deity. So these are the guys that basically wouldn't care what they eat as long as they eat it. I mean, they would probably be okay best buddies with the Flesh Eater Court if they're not, like, you know, eating one another. But another thing really quick is because I'm almost out of time, I think. But not only that, some of their units could strive from all rights with... moderate gray cavalry, crappy shooters, all right foot soldiers. They're slow, but they hit hard. Again, say it with me. They hit where it hurts, folks. But as for the rest of them, they can't... Some of their units are meh and beh. Some of their priests are meh, beh. It's kind of like a... It's more of a questionable house of cards where you have to be careful of who you're choosing and what you want to run for your units. And this also finishes up the episode of the... And I think that was the last army I went over. This episode took longer than I thought. But anyway, there are a couple things I want to talk about quick. So, I am trying to figure out some sources to figure out the War Machines and Hordes episode. But as of recording, I actually heard that there was kind of something a little bit unfair that Games Workshop is currently doing, where there was like this one post where they might have to take down videos off of YouTube or even like Twitter, I believe, that's Warhammer 40K related. So I find this to be like a little bit unfair for like fans of Warhammer 40K, because like there's like this one YouTuber that I follow by the name of there's two by the name of Brovial Alphabus, and there's this other really good Warhammer animator named I can't remember his name. Sodas. His name is Sodas, and basically he had to take all of his stuff off of his channel, and it really sucks too. And not only that, will they probably overturn it? I'm not sure. Can they be able to overturn it? But, like, this is, like, one of the things. So, they're doing, like, infringements, and this is where it says, individuals must not create fan films or animations based on our settings and characters. These are only to be created under license from Games Workshop. And I find this to be, like, really unfair, because, like, you give us, like, this mass world, but yet you don't want to have us let it have fun with it, and it's, like, really unfair. So, I don't know if they will overturn this idea or infringement or not, but all I have to do is say is, like, support those that, like, still, like, Warhammer 40K as best as you can. Like, support Zoran, this one YouTuber that I follow named Zoran the Bear. Support, like, the guy that I just said, like, Sodas as best you can. And support other content creators like Bulvades. There's also, like, another guy that I watch his Warhams video on named Speaker D and his other friends as well. There's also this other one Twitter poster that I follow because of her, or I mean not shit, because of their fan art of Warhammer 40K by the name of Tenotulia. I think I butchered that last name up, but follow her, give her support her as best you can. This is pretty much sucky, even under Games Workshop's part, because I'm guessing it has to do with Warhammer Plus, where they're trying to claim some videos that's done by animators as themselves. I find this is sleazy for them. This is sleazy even for them, and I don't know why they're doing it, but just like I said, support these creators as best you can in any way, shape, or form. And if you want, you could follow me on Twitter at supernerd6163. And just this quick thing, I might got some things or a lot of things wrong on this episode of your Ultra Nerd podcast. I am so sorry. I might have half-assed it on this episode. I will admit that. But some of the things I did say might be true, mainly about the army. It's not like about just the lore stuff, but like take some of the stuff with a grain of salt though. But follow me on Instagram, follow me on Twitter as best you can. And like I said, support these creators, support the people as best you can. And have a nice day and stay beautiful.